Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey everybody, it's me, Josh. And for this week's SYSK Selects, I've chosen How Snake Handlers Work. It's a really, truly fascinating episode that you might have overlooked. And yeah, we talk a lot about Christian snake handling, but we also talk about people who handle snakes for fun or because it's their job. There's a lot of people who handle snakes, weirdly. So kick back and enjoy this episode from May of 2016, How Snake Handlers Work.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and there's Jerry over there. And my hair is now a fourth character. Chuck laughed at my hair, everybody.
Well, if my beard can be the fourth character, your hair could be the fifth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we need... Actually, Jerry's got great hair.
She does have nice hair.
Stylish salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm. Amy Goodman-level tasteful salt and pepper.
I'm not sure what that means.
Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Has very tasteful salt and pepper hair.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the thing.
It is, clearly. Between Jerry and Amy Goodman, it's the thing.
That beats shoe polish black.
Yeah.
You know?
Like trickling down your forehead.
Yeah. But do what makes you happy, you know?
Well, sure.
If you don't...
Whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah, I should get some of that beer blackener and comb it into my beard and come in with like that jet black beard.
And Clyde Drexler will show up at your house. Urge you on.
What? Clyde Drexler?
Isn't he in the ads? Yeah.
Really? Former Portland Trailblazer? Great.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Clyde Drexler.
Oh, wow.
I think.
I'm going to have to check this out.
It's him and who was the one? I think Keith Hernandez. I was going to say the one that Kramer spit on, or that spit on Kramer.
Yeah, Keith Hernandez.
I think it's Keith Hernandez and Clyde Drexler.
Oh, wow.
In the Just for Men commercial.
Gotcha.
Well, there's our free package of Just for Men coming our way now.
Yeah.
Which we should say, thanks again to Crown Royal.
Man, you say you like Crown Royal, they send you some. You say you drank it, and they send you more.
I know, it's pretty awesome. I'm brushing my teeth with this stuff now. My lifestyle has improved for the better.
Pretty neat.
Thank you, dudes.
So, I was just discussing before we recorded, I said it's going to be hard to record a show on snake handling, and I'm talking about the religious aspect of it, without sort of, I fear for their safety. And I want to say you people are crazy.
A lot of people do.
But we have a long-standing tradition of, like, to each their own. I just, you know, I hate seeing people die from doing something completely preventable.
Yeah, you definitely do. But
like handling rattlesnakes and kissing them on the face.
From what I've seen of this or from what I've researched, I've not actually seen somebody handle snakes in person.
No.
But from what I've researched, the people who handle snakes are doing it through total and complete faith.
I know.
And there's even if you did judge them, I think it kind of rolls off their back quite a bit. So
it's not so much judgment. It's just like...
It's judgment.
No, it's not. I'm telling you. This is
it,
my opinion.
And I'm judging your opinion.
Oh, that's what you meant by it's judgment.
No, no.
Okay. No, it's not judgment. I hate to see people get hurt.
No, I know.
And die.
Have you ever seen somebody handle snakes?
No.
You had a religious upbringing?
Well, yeah, this is rare though. This is.
Yeah, it is.
Appalachian, foothill stuff.
Yeah, I know, but I mean,
not,
like, we're.
Not Atlanta.
We're in Georgia. I didn't know if you ever took like a field trip or something like that.
No, that's not, you have no idea how church works, do you?
I thought there were a lot of field trips.
No.
I gotcha.
In fact, you don't go to other churches. You're not supposed to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you stay at your own church. You don't go on field trips to other churches.
Aren't there like interfaith banquets and stuff like that?
No. Yeah, we had a field day.
Right.
With all the churches in the county.
Right.
No. I suppose other churches get together with, I suppose some get together with other churches, but that wasn't my experience.
It's typically frowned on in your experience.
Well, you just keep it in-house. Although we would go to the big youth conferences where it was all sorts of youth groups together.
That's a field trip.
Yeah. All just kids thrown in the big gymnasiums struggling to fight their hormonal urges.
Going, you believe what?
Right.
Yeah.
So no, I've never done it.
I didn't ask if you'd done it. I knew you
had done it. I'd never witnessed it. I've never been anywhere near it.
Okay. Although I have a strange feeling, Chuck, that it's possible we've both been near it just from living in Georgia all these years.
You think?
Without knowing it. Because, yeah, people who handle snakes religiously, it's actually called holiness serpent handling. Is that correct?
Yeah. They say serpent instead of snake.
Yeah. And it has to be a venomous snake to be considered a serpent.
Yes.
But for holiness serpent handling, until 2014, they kept a pretty tight lid on it for many, many decades.
Who, the handlers?
Yeah, the people who practice this as part of their religious beliefs.
Yeah, and I think still even most of them are pretty media shy. You'll see the occasional interview when someone dies.
Yeah.
They'll go knocking on the doors and they'll give an interview to explain, like, why they do what they do. But of course it was that TV show, which really, I mean, you know, you're clearly not media shy if you're doing a reality show.
No, it was called Snake Salvation and sorry, not 2014, but 2013. It was on Nat Geo and it was all about snake handling, for religious reasons. And, one of the main guys on the show ended up dying. He didn't die on the show, but he died the next year from a rattlesnake bite.
Oh, after it went off the air?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It was only on for one season. But his name was Pastor Jamie Coots, and he and another guy named, I believe, Stephen Amblin, are holiness serpent handlers who believe in kind of bringing it out of the shadows and into the Christian mainstream.
Good luck.
Yeah, if you're at all interested in that concept, you should read Even Unto Death. It was in the Chattanooga Free Press. It's a pretty good examination of that whole movement and those guys in particular.
I guess we should talk a little bit about other kinds of snake handling first, though.
Yeah, because when you see snake handling, I'm sure when people saw this, the title of this episode, they just assumed we're talking strictly about religious snake handling.
Yeah.
No, like other people handle snakes as well.
Like in professionals.
Non-religious settings, yeah.
That's true. They're called herpetologists, or some of them are. These are actually people who study snakes and amphibians, reptiles, and we talked about them on our snake show. And I think we dispelled a lot of rumors, not rumors, but myths on the snake show, which come into play when handling snakes, namely that they aren't out to kill you.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
But people display snakes. Well, there's a few different categories of people who handle snakes. There's people who display them like you drive through Florida. You might see a snake and gator farm.
Right.
Where they do snake shows.
And there's a really famous guy we'll talk about a little more in depth named Bill Haast.
Oh, yeah.
Who was like the man when it comes to that.
Boy, was he.
Yeah.
And then there are snake milkers. Of course, there's veterinarians who care for your snakes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they have to handle snakes.
Yeah.
There's also rescue and recovery people.
Sure.
Who come get.
There's a snake in my basement.
Right. A guy will show up,
mm-hmm.
and most likely he's professionally trained. At the very least, you would hope that he has a tremendous amount of experience in handling snakes.
Yeah, and they will show up, and you'll say, how much does it cost to get the snake out of my basement? And they'll say, how much you got?
Exactly. I'd like to see your last three bank account statements, please.
And in those cases, they will probably, you'll probably see what's called an extension tool. If you've ever seen those, tongs or those long, they call it a snake hook, sort of a, just a long metal, not a prod, cause you're not prodding.
It's like
That's a bad idea.
Senior adults use it to grab cans off of the high shelves in their homes.
A grabber?
Yeah, it's like that.
Sort of. I haven't seen them that actually flex and grab, do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you get some money, you're going to spend it on that.
The ones I've seen are just have a flat, you know, it's a long pole and then it has like an L-shaped, you know, at a right angle flat piece coming off that they pin the snake with.
Right. I've read this thing about handling snakes safely for like just normal people.
Yeah.
Or people who are starting out in the rescue and recovery business.
Sure.
And you can use just about anything. The key is extension. You want to put distance between you and the snake.
Yeah.
And I want to say as a legal disclaimer, I'm not at all advising anybody to handle a snake.
Nope.
But what I read was that you want to put as much distance as possible. So if you have a garden tool and a long one, use that.
Yeah.
But you also would want to use, let's say you have a hoe. You would want to turn your hoe upside down and use these, just the wooden end to manipulate the snake. Cause you don't want to hurt the snake. Yeah. You just want to get rid of it, right?
Yeah. I relocated a snake from my backyard a couple of years ago.
What'd you use?
I used my hands.
Oh my God.
It wasn't big. It was, but it wasn't small.
So how did you describe this interaction?
I was cutting the grass and I saw the snake. It was about a foot long.
Did you positively identify it as non-lethal or non-venomous?
Yeah, it was pretty, it was definitely not. Well, actually, it had the markings where it could have been a copperhead.
Okay.
It wasn't just like a green snake.
Right. So you took a shot of whiskey and approached it.
I approached it and I did use an implement to, pin it. But I can't remember what I used. It was something, you know, blunt and soft. It wasn't, you know, an axe, you know, head.
Right, right.
Because like you said, it
wasn't a cinder block that you dropped
no,
from like 10
what did
feet.
I use? It was, I can't remember. Let's just say like a wooden paddle.
Okay.
It might have been a piece of wood, actually.
I gotcha.
And then I did like I saw on the TV shows. I grabbed it behind the, you know, right behind its head, got a good hold of it and picked it up.
Not bad.
And it wrapped around my wrist, and I went, and then I ran across the street like Pee Wee Herman and threw it in the woods. Didn't throw it. I laid it down in the woods.
Put it into the woods.
And it was great. I think it was a successful catch and release.
It sounds like it. You weren't bitten.
Yeah, and I'm 99% sure I didn't hurt the snake.
Good. Yeah, that sounds pretty successful.
Yeah.
What I was reading in this one article was that you – most snakes, if you just approach them calmly, and I guess smoothly is a good way to put it.
Sure. Don't lunge at the snake.
Right. And also don't be like, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. Just kind of come at the snake and pick it up like it's just a stick in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to strike you. Supposedly, according to this website of which I have no affiliation whatsoever.
Yeah, and I'm not, my story, please do not take that as a, that was probably pretty dumb for me to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And even if it's non, I don't want to get bitten by a snake. I don't care if it's venomous or not.
Right.
One of my biggest fears is seeing a snake attach its mouth to my body.
Right.
It frightens me.
Well, I have to say also this site put pretty plainly, do not ever touch a snake that you haven't positively identified as non-venomous. Because, I mean, if you, you could have easily been bitten and lost your hand or died or whatever.
It was real. Well, no, I could have gotten to the hospital pretty quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, anti-venom works.
Apparently 100% of the time.
Yeah.
If it's gotten to in a timely manner.
Yes. And for the pedants out there, we will say anti-venin and anti-venom because both are acceptable.
Yes, they are.
All right.
So, Chuck, let's take a break right here, huh?
Sounds good.
Hey,
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. Okay. Did I say how far a snake can strike?
No, do you know?
This is what I've got. From the same place that said, just go smoothly and casually up to a snake.
Yeah, introduce yourself.
It says that any snake greater than 4 feet can typically strike about one-third to one-half the distance of its body length.
That's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. A snake between 1 and 3 feet can strike about one-half to two-thirds its body length. And then a snake under a foot can usually strike about its whole body length.
Okay, I would take all those numbers and double them.
That's probably a good idea.
Just to be safe.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm the guy who, you know, picked up maybe a copperhead.
Right. Man, that is scary stuff.
You do the same thing. You don't want to pay a guy.
Probably I would do what this site was saying was made a lot of sense to me. It's like take a garbage can, tip it over on its side, take a shovel, use the wooden end of it, the handle, get it into the can, turn it over. Put like something on top of the can and then call somebody. Or you could take the can to, like the woods or something like that.
That's probably what I should have done in retrospect. I was feeling brave.
Those shots of whiskey.
I've watched enough nature TV.
Right.
I know how this is done. So the last thing that I think we didn't mention is, snake milkers.
Oh yeah.
Which, snake venom is very valuable. 1 gram, what you do is you freeze dry it into a powder after you get the liquid and you sell it to research labs.
For big money.
Yeah. 1 gram of freeze dried venom from an exotic snake can go up to $5,000. But it might take 100 milkings to get that much.
Yeah.
So do the math.
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
Yes. especially if you love hanging out with snakes.
And, it's a legit job. You can make, you know, $2,500 a month or more as a snake milker.
Easily, depending on how many snakes you have.
That's right.
So there are a lot of people that handle snakes, but all of them, well, I should say, all of the people who professionally handle snakes have a rule of thumb, which is don't get hurt. Don't be stupid.
Sure.
Because there are two ways that snakes can typically get you. Venomous snakes obviously inject venom. And that's why people milk snakes, is to get that venom so that they can create anti-venin, so that your life can be saved if you end up getting bit by a snake, right?
Yes.
And venom's pretty nasty stuff. I think we did one on, like, what's the most poisonous Animal in the World.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And we talked a lot about venom, but it's worth revisiting. Basically, depending on the venom that you're injected with, it can cause tissue damage wherever it's spread.
Yeah.
And by tissue damage, I mean just completely wipe out your tissue.
Uh-huh.
And if that is blood vessels, your blood vessels bleed and you start bleeding internally. If it's your liver or your heart, those things start bleeding internally and end up shutting down. You can have multi-system, multi-organ failure.
Yeah.
Paralysis, respiratory distress, all sorts of horrible stuff.
Yeah, if it's on a limb or digit, you might lose that, even if you get the antivenin in time.
Exactly, because it so thoroughly destroys the tissue, right?
That's right.
And it causes a lot of pain, too. Like I was reading about the Texas coral snake. It actually has this molecule that opens the gates to your pain receptors.
Wow.
And just holds them open so that you're just feeling excruciating, unremitting pain. So it's bad stuff.
Yeah.
So you don't want to get bitten by a snake. You also don't want to mess around with constrictors either, because they will mess you up as well.
Yeah.
They will, I guess, wrap around you
and
then suffocate you.
Yeah.
Break your back. Stop your heart.
If it's big enough, sure.
Bad news.
Bad news.
So snakes can be dangerous is the point.
Yes. But again, not to feed into that anti-snake propaganda.
We're not trying to start a whacking day.
No. So getting back to the milkers.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
They are what's called free handlers. They don't use, you would think, like, they should just wear anti-snake gloves. But you need to really feel the snake. I read an interview with a guy that milked snakes for a living. And he was like, no, you got to feel with your skin. The snakes are really fast. And, you know, you have to react and adjust to every little movement they make. And even wearing a glove, even a thin glove wouldn't help anyway.
Right.
But a chainmail glove or a Kevlar glove you wouldn't be able to feel what's going on anyway.
Right. Plus, so you may accidentally, like, crush the snake's head. They're not exactly made of Kevlar themselves.
That's true.
So when you're milking a snake, when you're free handling it, you basically want to hold it the way you did behind the head, right?
Yeah.
Where the jaws meet, using your thumb and forefinger.
Yes, that is correct. And that does two things. It keeps the head from turning on you. And it puts your fingers on the and your thumb on those venom glands, which is what they, you know, they just kind of massage it. You can also use electrical stimulation, but the traditional way is to just give a little squeeze and it'll milk those little glands.
Right. But first, before you start squeezing, you want to basically take the fangs, the front fangs.
Oh,
of
yeah.
The
you're not
snake.
Just like spraying it around the room
into your hand.
I miss that part.
You put their fangs through a membrane that's pulled over a jar.
Yeah.
And then the venom just pumps out of the fangs into the jar.
Yeah, it's really neat looking.
It is.
It's pretty remarkable.
Scary looking.
It is.
Man.
Agreed. And they recommend that if you are milking, if you're a professional milker, you should have a little buddy with you.
Oh, yeah.
In case something goes wrong. It's not a solo job.
Really, anytime you're handling a snake, there should be more than one person.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't. I should have called Emily outside.
Yep.
But she wouldn't have let me pick up the snake. I had to keep it quiet. I think I walked up to her and was like, look at this.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. And they say for constrictors, they have a little handy chart as well. For at least one person for every 5 feet of snake, unless it's an anaconda or reticulated python, in that case, you want every 3 feet of snake.
Right. Because
an additional human.
Those are very heavy snakes.
Yeah.
Females can get up to like 200 pounds, which is 90 kilograms.
I saw the Jackass bit the other day again where, I think it might have been in the sequel where, they put it's a python or an anaconda in one of those, pits of, little red balls that kids jump in. And they, you know, Johnny Knoxville and the gang get in there. And this thing bites, this huge thing bites Johnny Knoxville like two or three times.
Wow.
I mean, the thing's got the head the size of a baseball.
It sounds like a Jackass bit.
Hey to Lance Bangs.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jackass.
Right.
Yeah, he was one of the filmmakers behind that. And we had dinner with him
in
Portland.
Very pleasant dinner.
So hello, Lance, if you're out there listening. I can't believe that they did that anyway. It was, and he kept getting back in. He kept getting bit. He's bleeding and he keeps getting back in.
I don't know why this isn't ringing a bell. I'm sure I've seen Jackass 2 a bunch of times.
Well, you know.
Plus, Chuck, you also want somebody around anytime you're handling a snake, whether it's a python or a venomous snake or any snake, really, because you want somebody to call 911 if something goes wrong.
That's
you
right.
want somebody to be able to drive you to the hospital if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Or if a python's trying to get around you, they can keep the tail from fully wrapping around. There's a lot of stuff that an extra person can do. And things go really horribly awry when that doesn't happen. There was actually a very famous case not too many years ago of a Venezuelan zookeeper. I think it was Venezuela, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Who was, I think, a grad student working as a zookeeper. And he or she went into a python's cage, a 10-foot Burmese python cage, alone during the night shift.
Boy.
And they found
what for?
Probably just to get something or to give it some food. Just something. I'm sure it was something mundane and
like
totally not worth losing your life over.
Yeah.
And they found the person the next morning, like half swallowed by the python.
Oh, my Lord.
So you always want somebody around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should we get into the religious snake handling?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, you said it, dude. It's called holiness serpent handling.
Yeah.
And we actually, you might think like, oh, they've done this for millennia.
Nope.
Or at least since, you know, the 17, 1800s.
No.
Nope. We have a definitive start date, 1910 in Tennessee, the Dolly Pond Church of God in Birchwood. There was a preacher named George Hensley. And, the legend is that he was, having a faith crisis and was reading Mark from the Bible, 16:18, thou shalt take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them.
Ooh, that was a good Appalachian preacher.
And so he supposedly turned and saw a snake there and said, I'm going to take this quite literally.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible says to take up snakes, so I'm going to pick it up.
And he picked it up, and the snake didn't bite him, and he said, well, there goes my crisis of faith.
That's right.
And apparently George Hensley didn't start out a preacher. He started out an alcoholic who had trouble keeping work. And once this happened to him, he found his religious calling and became a preacher in the Pentecostal tradition. And he actually helped establish this separate group that's kind of within the Pentecostal religion. But the Church of God of Signs Following is essentially the sect that he helped found.
Yeah, these are subsets of subsets of subsets of Christianity.
Yeah. And so Hensley's whole philosophy was you read the Bible plainly, is how he put it, which means if it says you pick up snakes, you pick up snakes.
Right.
That's God's command to you.
Right.
If it says you can drink any deadly thing and it will not harm you, you're supposed to do that.
Right.
All churches are independent, so you decide whether women can wear pants or not at your church. And it was about as simple as that.
Yeah.
And it actually took off and became very popular throughout Appalachia from the 1910s till about the 1940s. There was, I think, thousands of people who went to these Church of God with Signs Following churches.
Yeah, and Hensley, for his own record, said that he survived more than 400 bites. Until 1955, he was in Florida in an abandoned, I don't know if it was abandoned, but it was a blacksmith shop.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing a demonstration and I guess holding a little, religious service.
Right.
And, he got bitten and refused treatment because that's part of the deal is they leave it up to you.
Yeah.
Like Coots, I saw an interview with him and he said, if someone gets bitten, I call the paramedics. Have them come down, mm-hmm. and then I say, well, now you have a choice. You can either do as God commands and refuse treatment,
yeah.
and he'll heal you if you should be healed, and if it's your time to die, it's your time to die. Or you can say, I'd like treatment, please.
Yeah.
But in the tradition of, you know, a true believer, Hensley said, no, I don't want treatment, and he died the next morning.
Yeah, but he survived a bunch of other bites, like you said.
Yeah, 400, he says.
Although, live by the snake, die by the snake is probably a pretty good motto.
Sure.
A lot of people think that holiness serpent handlers are either worship the snakes because they do keep them in cages on the altar during services.
Yeah.
Or that they're doing this as a show of faith to basically show, look at how much I believe in God.
Right.
Apparently this is definitively not the case. That when, holiness serpent handlers pick up snakes, and this still goes on.
Oh yeah.
Like there are still churches throughout Appalachia, apparently from Ohio to Florida, where hundreds, if not a few thousand people, do this, go to these services.
Yeah.
When they do it, they don't do it at every service necessarily.
Right.
But when they do it, it's because they believe they have just been commanded by God to show their obedience to God by picking up a serpent and handling it. And when they do it, it's apparently they just enter into immediate religious ecstasy.
Yeah, it's like they kind of jump up and down and maybe speak in tongues and sort of a trance-like state. I guess we haven't even really described it. I assume most people have seen this at some point. Mm-hmm. Look up a YouTube video. They're not holding the snake by the back of the head.
No.
They are literally just, sometimes there are five and six snakes, and they're just holding them, man. They're kissing them on the face. They're rubbing them on their face.
They wear them like crowns.
Yeah.
They'll throw them over their shoulders. Yeah, they're the big difference between religious snake handlers and professional snake handlers is that religious snake handlers go to zero degree to establish any kind of safety precautions.
Right.
That's entirely antithetical to the point.
Yeah, they don't have anti-venom shots standing by in a medical kit.
No, they don't.
No. That's one. There's 100 things that are different, but sure.
Right.
I know what you mean.
And so this whole thing was very popular among the Appalachians for a good 20, 30 years. And then in the 40s, there was a rash of people who died after being bitten. And all of a sudden, the outside world started to look in and say, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And the authorities were like, well, we don't think you should be able to do that. And
right.
They started to try to pass laws, but none of them, there actually are laws that indirectly prevent people from doing this. And there's actually some that directly prevent them. I guess in every Appalachian state except for West Virginia, but they're very rarely enforced because of religious liberties, right?
Yeah, religious freedoms.
Yeah.
There have been some raids, notably, actually, Coots Place.
Mm-hmm.
Coots Place? Sounds like a sitcom.
Hanging with Mr. Coots.
Coots Church was raided as a part of a series of stings in 2008 under the code name
stings.
Twice Shy.
Really?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
See what they did there? In one church, they confiscated 125 snakes and made 10 arrests. And then at Coots Church, I think they got about 75 snakes and arrested a few others, including him. But I don't think they stay in jail very long. I can't imagine what the penalty is.
Well, the grand juries typically refuse to indict them.
Oh, really? They mm-hmm. just say...
They might be charged with it. They might be hauled to jail, but
right.
there's no indictment that's handed down, so they don't go to trial.
But they confiscate the snakes, at least.
Yeah, usually, because in Tennessee, for example, it's illegal to keep venomous snakes. And the snakes that they're using are very venomous. They're deadly cottonmouths, rattlesnakes, all sorts of very deadly venomous snakes.
Yeah.
So they're breaking the law just by having the snakes. But again, they're typically left alone as far as the courts are concerned. And the reason why you were saying at the beginning of this episode that it's hard to not just be like, stop.
Yeah.
I think the reason why I don't have that much trouble with this, I came to see it differently after doing research on it.
Okay.
They have mores involved with this stuff. So.
Moray eels?
No.
Oh, I thought they handled those too.
No. Because that would require like an aquarium, and nobody wants that.
Sure.
They have just kind of rules around the whole thing where you don't go handle a serpent unless you feel like you have been commanded by God to go do that right then.
Yeah.
And you're imbued with the Holy Spirit, which is protecting you right then.
Right.
There's no pressure whatsoever to go do that.
Right.
There's actually discouragement to do it for any kind of show of faith or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then children are banned from doing it. They're not allowed to handle the snakes.
So only after that, you were fine with it?
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, you're free to walk into traffic if you want.
I find it even less harmful than that because you're endangering the other driver's life if you're walking into traffic. Somebody might steer into somebody else to get around you. This is you and a snake.
Yeah.
Now, I do have issues with how the snakes are treated.
Well, that's one of my other big problems.
So we'll get into that. We got to take a break. How about that? Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 2512928887, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey there, everybody. Here's some bonus stuff you should know. This time it's about traveling to Orlando for business. Orlando has tons of places to host your conferences and meetings. Dr. Michael Edwards, CEO of Ocean Insight, said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. And when the day is done, you can kick off each evening at one of 46 Michelin-rated restaurants. What's not to love? So check out Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at OrlandoForBusiness.com. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Chuck, we're back. What's the problem?
What's your beef? Well, over the years, let's get into some numbers. In about 100 years, they estimate about 100 people have died from doing it. And if you look at the numbers and the number of people handling snakes, it's you'd think there'd be a lot more people dying from snake bites.
Pretty surprising, so, especially considering that most of them do refuse medical treatment. After being bitten, they still recover.
Correct.
That is unusual. It's remarkable.
It is. NPR did a story on this in 2013, and some snake experts, herpetologists, started coming out of the woodwork. Specifically, the Kentucky Reptile Zoo has been sort of investigating this on their own for years. And they said, you know what? There's a lot of things going on here that is sort of a rigging of the...
Stacking of the deck?
Stacking of the deck in the human's favor. For one, these snakes are mistreated, which is one reason I have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. By all accounts from their investigations, they saw crowded cages. They were dirty. There was no fecal matter in the cage, which looked like they weren't being fed. Mm-hmm. They asked Coots about that, and he said, well, my rat connection went away.
My rat hook.
My mouse and rat hookup disappeared on me. And he says, besides, they won't eat anyway, I think was his quote, which I don't understand what that means.
I don't either.
Snakes eat. They want to eat.
That sounds like something someone says when they're like pulling their collar away from their neck.
Yeah. And he said, they asked him how long his snakes lived. And he said, on average, 3 or 4 months. The Reptile Zoo in Kentucky said snakes should live 10 to 20 years.
He said they live on average 3 or 4 months?
Yeah, they're being mistreated.
Yeah.
So because of this mistreatment, these hungry snakes, there's a lot of things that happen once you have a hungry snake. And right. One is they are less likely to strike if they're unhealthy.
Yeah.
What else?
When they do strike, they're less likely to inject venom. So it's likelier to be a dry strike.
Yeah, 25%, I think, are dry strikes.
But that's just under normal circumstances.
Oh, really?
If it's a malnourished and less fed or underwatered snake, it's probably even a higher incidence of dry strikes than that.
Okay. The venom apparently isn't as potent if it's an unhealthy snake.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, they raided a church in Tennessee. I think that's Andrew Hamblin's, like you were talking about.
Yeah, I think I may have said his first name incorrectly before, but yeah, that's who I was talking about.
And they confiscated 53 snakes that most of them died within months. They were all unhealthy. And so basically you've got these malnourished snakes that, you know, even when they do get bitten, they're maybe even not getting any venom or less potent venom.
Right.
So it's rigged in a certain way.
Plus also this article points out, it was a Julia Layton joint. She points out that it's also possible that those of us here on the outside, maybe even the holiness serpent handlers, overestimate just how aggressive snakes actually are by nature.
Yeah, like you were saying, if you're handling them gently,
right,
they're not going to strike you.
Especially if they don't feel threatened. If they're just like, oh, this is just a religious person.
Right.
They're in the throes of religious ecstasy. I'll just ride it out. I've been wanting to be gently shaked for a while. So let's see where this goes.
Plus, a lot of these snakes are raised in captivity, and snake experts will tell you if you raise a snake in captivity, it's less likely to strike at you because they don't fear you as they should.
Right. Plus, snakes don't typically, speaking from an evolutionary standpoint, it doesn't make any sense for a snake to be like, yeah, I'm going to strike you, thing that is way bigger than I am, that I don't prey upon naturally. I'm going to deliver all of my venom.
Right.
Because their venom, they need it to actually eat. They need it for prey, right?
Yeah.
And the snake wouldn't know this, but natural selection would have figured it out by now, that if a snake is striking something like a hippo that's coming at it and delivers all of its venom,
right,
that hippo's still going to stomp the snake before the venom actually has any effect on it.
Yeah, and you've lost all your venom.
Right. And
you have to, you can regenerate it, but it, you know, it's not like immediate.
Right. So it doesn't... In an evolutionary natural selection standpoint, it doesn't really make sense for a snake to strike and deliver a full venom bite.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So you add all this stuff together, and suddenly the mystery of snake handling still is, it becomes a little clearer. It makes a little more sense how people are surviving.
Yeah.
But it's still remarkable that that more people don't die considering how often these snakes are handled.
Yeah, and if you look at interviews with Coots on the YouTube, he'll pick up his chunk of rotted finger that he keeps, mm-hmm. and show you. He'll mm-hmm. say, "Look, this. You know, my wife had to cut it off at the mid knuckle with rose pruners."
That was a different guy. That was Bill Haas.
Well, no, Coots, it happened to him too.
Oh, really? Roast pruners again?
Yeah, like he literally held up his finger and showed it to the lady on CNN. She was like, ew.
Yeah.
Like, you kept that thing?
Yeah. Well, Bill Haas' wife cut his off with roast pruners.
I think digits falling off as a snake handler is pretty common. Right. I don't think it's like, no, that was that one guy.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there you go. I'm against it because they're mistreating snakes.
Yeah, I have that. That's my issue with it too.
And so it's.
Other than that, I'm like, if you want to, do it. It's your thing.
Yeah.
It's just one of those rare instances where you are, again, aside from the treatment of the snake, you're not harming anybody but yourself.
Yeah.
There's almost no other instance that's just like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess I'm getting to be a libertarian. So let's talk about Bill Haas, man, because that guy deserves maybe even his own podcast one day.
Yeah, this dude is something else. Boy, where do you start with him? He was, well, as a kid, he had a dream to, he was always obsessed with snakes.
Yeah.
And he had a dream to one day have a snake house open to the public where mm-hmm. he could educate people. And he was an educator. He wasn't a religious snake handler. We should point that out up front.
He was a self-trained scientist.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. Thank you.
So little kid has a dream and he grows up and makes that dream a reality and really believed in his heart and through experimentation that snake venom could be very beneficial to a human.
Yeah. He was actually, after the Miami Serpentarium, which is his famous place that he opened, was in full swing by the late 70s, he was in clinical trials using snake venom mm-hmm. to help cure things like Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis.
Yeah.
With a doctor, and the FDA actually came in and shut him down because they were basically doing human experimentation that was unsanctioned.
Yeah, and
but they were seeing results from what I understand.
Yeah, apparently he was seeing results with his polio work earlier mm-hmm. when Jonas Salk invented the vaccine, and he was like, oh, man, I guess so close.
It's great that it's cured, but I wish it could have been me and the snakes.
So this dude started self-immunizing in 1948. He injected one part Cape Cobra venom mm-hmm. with 1,000 parts saline solution into his forearm and started gradually increasing the amount of venom he would inject into his own body.
Right. And
over
then
the years.
Within a couple of decades, he was injecting every day a cocktail of 32 different snakes and reptiles' venoms, which is a process called Mithridatism. Yeah, Mithridates. Mithridatism.
Okay.
Mithridates was this famous, I can't remember. He was an ancient king, and he developed a tolerance to poison because he was so afraid of being poisoned.
Oh, so he would drink a little bit.
Right.
Nice.
And this is, it's, so now if anybody who does that, it's Mithridatism, and that's what he was doing. So he actually did this for such a long time that his blood itself became anti-venin.
Yeah.
And it actually saved 21 people's lives.
Yeah. He would draw pints of blood from his body to keep on hand. Mm-hmm. And he literally several times flew all around the world mm-hmm. with his blood to give it to people to save them.
Yeah. And apparently in, I think, 1989, he was bit by a Pakistani pit viper and he didn't have any anti-venom. And the White House used back channels to get their hands on some from Iran.
I heard about that.
And saved his life.
Yeah.
Pretty neat stuff.
He has this famous quote, I could become a poster boy for the benefits of venom. If I live to be 100, I'll really make the point. And he lived to be 100.
Yeah.
100 years old.
Yeah.
With snake venom pumping through his blood all day long.
Yeah. And there's a really neat discussion about this guy in a larger article called The Mithridates of Fond du Lac. I can't remember the guy who wrote it. It's a really great article. I'll tweet it out or something. But it has some stuff about Bill Haas in it. But it's also about this other dude named Tim Freed who... In the article, he takes 4 venomous snake bites in 48 hours, although the whole thing's about whether or not he can live through 5. But he's been doing the same thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the Serpentarium in Miami closed in 1984 because, and I saw that the accident was in 1977, so I'm not sure why it took 7 years to close. But a 6-year-old boy, he had crocodiles and other stuff
right.
at the place.
Yeah.
6-year-old boy fell into the croc pit and was mauled. And it really obviously disturbed Bill because he wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't, you know, he tore him up. And he shot this crocodile 9 times with a Luger pistol. And I guess 7 years later decided to close it.
Right.
Apparently the dad didn't blame Bill, which is remarkable for the accident, which I just thought was strange.
Well, I mean, if he took safety precautions and the kid went around him, then
yeah, maybe so.
It's not that dude's fault. Either way, it's horrible and tragic.
Yeah.
And he ended up closing the Serpentarium as a result of it, although I didn't realize it was 7 years later, too. But he kept his milking operation going.
That's right. And his own self-injection routine going.
Right. And he did. He flew to Venezuela once into the Amazon to deliver some of his own blood to save a boy's life. And he was made an honorary citizen of Venezuela as a result. That is so cool.
Yeah, pretty amazing. He claims to have never been sick a day in his life, never had the cold, never had the flu, didn't take aspirin. And this article that you sent says he was unusually youthful looking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I looked at pictures. I don't know if he looked 100, but
right.
I don't know about unusually youthful looking.
Right.
Maybe so. He had a glow about him.
Yeah, a glow from venom. I'm going to start shooting that stuff, I guess.
Oh, yeah?
No, I'm going to stay away from it and just be fascinated by the whole concept.
All righty.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
I don't either. If you want to know more about snake handling, you can type those words in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said that, it's time for... Oh.
You know what it's time for.
Facebook questions.
All right. So what we do here is when listener mails have dried up a little bit. We put it out to the people on Facebook to send in questions, and we'll answer over the next 2 episodes as many as we can that aren't dumb. And it's sort of a rapid-fire thing, starting now. I'm like Billy on the Street.
Who?
Billy on the Street, Billy Eichner.
No.
Great TV show. And here
go. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I'm aware of it.
It's wonderful.
Let's start with Greg Storkin. Good old Greg Storkin.
Yes.
He says, if you woke up to find that you had replaced a character in a movie you know well, what movie and character would it be, and how would you handle the circumstances differently? Man, this is a really good question. I feel like Josh has probably had an answer to this for years for The Shining. Wink emoticon. Did he spell out wink emoticon, or did it just print out like that?
I don't know. Huh. I'm not sure. But
oh, no, he spelled it out.
I had my answer easy. John Rambo.
And what would you do differently? Would you just immediately surrender?
I would have, in the very beginning of First Blood, when he drives him across the bridge and says, keep going that way, I would have just kept going that way instead of turning around and going back into town.
Nice. The end.
Yeah, John Rambo the Bat. It'd be a boring movie.
Well, it'd be very short.
Yeah, it'd be a short film. John Rambo, Hitchhiker.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Nice. What about you?
I'll have to think about that.
All right. And hey, Storkin, we'll see you in Denver, buddy.
All right. Smile emoticon.
This is from Jamie Whitaker. Josh always refers to his favorite book. Josh, you want to say it?
1491?
That's right.
Yeah.
But I'm usually driving and I never take it down and can't remember. So he says it's 18 something.
It's not right.
1491.
That's right.
Chuck, what is your number one recommendation? I don't know if I have a favorite book, but I always recommend the book Middlesex just because it's one of the great books that I've read. Jeffrey Eugenides.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Eugenides?
I think that's right.
He wrote, he's written a lot of great books. But Middlesex is wonderful. So
great all-around book.
Yep.
Okay. Nice one, man. Let's see. Trey McLam has a great question. How different would our health be if we could sleep every day until we wake up naturally, as if alarm clocks were never invented? I would guess we'd all be a lot more mellow. We'd get less done, sure, but we'd be more mellow. Like our 5-day weekend. Remember that episode?
I do.
I think that kind of dovetails with that quite a bit. Just kind of doing what you do. There's your answer, Trey.
Good one.
I don't know about that. It was a good question, terrible answer.
Sam Horn, you've been dropping hints of late about live shows overseas. Would love to see you in the UK. We have loads of stuff you should know. Terrible. Sam, we're hoping to come to the UK this summer.
We're working on it hard.
We're working on it. It may or may not pan out because planning shows overseas is, you know, can be challenging.
Yeah, you have to take a citizenship test. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
It's weird.
So we're trying, and listen up for updates on that front.
Okay. Let's see. Jessica Riddell says, I listened to your color podcast, Color with a U, and Chuck mentioned he might have a color deficiency. I'd like to hear a podcast about color blindness and color deficiencies. Please, smile emoticon. I think people are putting this in. It's typing it out when you print it. It's got to be.
Maybe. What's the question? That wasn't a question at all, was it?
Nope.
Okay.
Done and done.
Good one. Chuck, well, they say Josh, Diego Leal. How's the property squatting coming along? That was me. Haven't heard anything from a few years. And I haven't heard anything about Hippie Rob. I'm still squatting, everybody. It's working out great. And as far as we know, we don't own the property yet, but we think the county might, and there's really, I don't think we're in any danger of losing it.
Nice.
Anytime soon.
It's not your next door neighbor, back neighbor.
No.
Behind neighbor, whatever.
Nope.
So yeah, the county. I don't know if you'll ever be able to own it then, even through adverse possession.
Maybe not, but I don't think there's anything they can do with it. It's such a small strip.
Gotcha.
So I think we're good.
Are they going to start parking like a tar truck back there? County land.
What about Hippie Rob? Any updates there, Josh?
Hippie Rob will forever live forever in the ether.
Great.
Claire Dalby. Dalby?
Dalby.
I'd say Dalby, too.
Mm-hmm.
Normally. If you could revisit an episode and do it differently slash better, which one? The Sun? Not a bad idea. The Sun, I would definitely like another crack at.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I can't think of them. I mean, we've done like 800 plus episodes. Every once in a while, I will leave here, and I say it every time I feel that way. I'll be like, that one just wasn't as good as it could have been. And it's always something that's like really important. Like the topic is really important to me, so I'll like overthink it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it always pans out fine, but I can't think of any that I would just like to go back and do over again.
Yeah, my thought is just kind of let, you know, even if I'm a little disappointed, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's a philosophy, you know? I guess.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a boring philosophy. Dan Floyd, are we ever going to get a How Jerry Works episode? Nope. Jerry doesn't want people to know how she works. She operates in stealth and secret.
Yeah.
The CIA.
And she may or may not exist. Larry Tiffany says, what evidence would we see if the flood epic of Noah's Ark were indeed true? Well, Larry, we've got something for you, buddy. It's a whole episode on Noah's Ark and the flood. It was a pretty good one, if I remember correctly.
I have no recollection.
That's a good one.
Okay. How about one more each? Luke Vissering, have you ever been told the topic is off limits? No. Luke, we have not. We are very lucky in that we are free to program our own content, and all the various bosses and company owners we've had over the years have always steered clear of that, which we're very thankful for.
Yeah.
We self-regulate.
One more. Josh Robinson asks, Josh and Chuck, why do you hate the 90s? Why do you hate my childhood?
I love the 90s.
I think the 90s were like, okay. Don't think that they were, I don't think they produced that much great stuff. Everything just had this kind of superficialness to it, felt like.
Boy, I love the 90s. The 90s was my 20s in my college. That's beloved very much to me. And things were great in the 90s in a lot of ways.
Are you nostalgizing right now?
No.
I thought we had a ban on that.
No, I love the 90s. Great, great music. Great culture.
See, I think the music thing is where I have the issue. I wouldn't say it was great, great music. There was some good music. I don't dispute that. But I think there was a lot of really bad music.
That's every generation.
Not necessarily. I knew you were going to say that, and I was prepared to respond, and it is as follows. Look at the 80s, right?
Okay. A lot of bad music, a lot of great music.
But there was a lot more good, listenable music. Like, think of all the one-hit wonders in the 80s. There were a lot. lot of singles that were pretty good and listenable even at the time, not just in retrospect. In the 90s, there was a lot of stuff on the radio was awful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like Nirvana and stuff like that?
No, I mean, again, there was some like good stuff too. Yeah. There were plenty of good bands, but for the most part, it felt like there was just a lot of really bad stuff too. I'll go back to the Spin Doctors again. I think that is the emblem of the 90s.
Yeah.
Spin Doctors. They were huge for a little while. And then I think that also carried into the early 2000s with a lot of the terribleness too.
Interesting.
And just like there just seemed to be, and I know the 80s were super vapid, very shallow,
yeah,
but almost to a cartoonish degree. The 90s were unaware of its superficiality, it felt like. Like it was trying really hard to not be superficial, but it was failing at it.
I think I reject the notion that a lot of one-hit wonders equals good.
Not good, better.
I got three words for you. Walking on sunshine.
That was Katrina and the Waves. What was wrong with that?
Well, maybe we just have different tastes.
Maybe so.
All right.
Let's end this now.
And don't it feel good?
Yeah. Yes, it does, Chuck. So that was Facebook questions.
Part one.
I was about to say, let's never do that again. If you want to get in touch with us, you can join us on facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. We're also on Twitter at SYSKpodcast. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.